Good evening and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. This is Ashwini, and my guest for the day is Jen. Hi, Jen. Are you online?
I am. Yeah, it takes a lot of presence of mind when it says unmuted not to introduce it.
Well, that's why we do practice. We stay on our toes,
exactly,
paying attention and mix things up.
Exactly.
Roles are being reversed.
Yep.
Yes. Anyway, so welcome, Jen. And the topic that we were going to look at today was the announcement of the new book.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of you interviewing Sherry or me on the book, we thought it would be a great idea to have you talk about it since you were reading it. What
mm-hmm.
better way to introduce a book than by asking the person who's reading it what it's about?
Truly, yeah, that kind of fresh perspective of just getting the first look at it, yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, and the intriguing part about that, Jen, is that you're practicing with it, which is what the fun
yeah.
part of the book is. So first of all, can you tell us what the book is, what you're looking at?
Yeah,
and
yeah, sure, absolutely.
Like that, to start us off.
Yep. Okay, so The Big Bamboozle. Based on an email class that we had some time back. I can't remember exactly when it was. But I'll tell you, the teaching of the book began from the moment that it was handed to me, truly.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
I received it in an evening, and just the excitement. You know, first of all, it's got this fantastic cover. It has the design of all Sherry's and your and Sherry's books, you know, each one with their own kind of design to go with the book. But so the design was great, and I just could not wait to just dive in and start reading it. And I had just heard the thing that Sherry talked about in the newsletter this week of, you know, that thing of how we have acronyms for everything and initials.
Uh-huh.
And it was so beautiful the way that she laid out, you know, let's not do that anymore. You know, when we're
uh-huh.
talking about stop, drop, and text, let's not say SDT. Let's talk
mm-hmm.
about it, stop, drop, and text, because mm-hmm. we get to actually have the experience. Only conditioning would want to rush through something, right?
Uh-huh.
So,
uh-huh.
So I realized that as I went to, I had this sense of like, oh, I'm going to be up all night, you know, just read the whole book. And I realized, oh, my gosh, that's the bamboozle that it's starting with. So here is
uh-huh.
this danger, right, in terms of conditioning, this really dangerous piece of propaganda in my hand that's going to really
uh-huh.
probably support freedom. And so
uh-huh.
how is it going to take that from me will get me to just rush through it, to kind of consume
uh-huh.
it in a way.
Uh-huh.
So I decided that I would read it into the recorder. And so I'll only read it
wow.
as fast as I can say out loud. And so that's what I'm
uh-huh.
doing. I'm reading it into the recorder.
Uh-huh.
And stop me at any point if I.
oh no, I'm hanging on every word, Jen.
Okay, good. So I started to read through it, and it took me I don't know, however, a couple of days. I mean, you know, not all day because I don't have a lot of long periods of time to read. But so it took me a couple of days of reading when I have time to read to the point where I got to the first bamboozle. And so then
uh-huh.
the way it's structured is that there's this beautiful introduction, oh my gosh, and then it goes into the 12 bamboozles. And the way
mm-hmm.
it's structured is that there's one for each month, and within the month, there's one exercise for each week. So for the first
uh-huh.
bamboozle of the first month, then there's an assignment for each of the 4 weeks within that month. And I decided, much to conditioned mind's dismay, that that's how I'm going to read it. And so
uh-huh.
I'll be finishing reading the book in, what, October 31st of 2016.
Well, again, there's just so much that the way in which you're approaching the book is practice,
mm-hmm.
right? So the guide
yeah,
lays
exactly.
out, let's not get through awareness practice. Let's enjoy
yeah.
the beauty of awareness practice. And what
yeah.
you're doing with the book is practicing that guidance, right? Because as
yeah.
you said, conditioning, and the book says, You know, conditioning just wants us to give it a read-through, and then we get sort of the content of it, and we think we know what it's about, and then we just incorporate that into the language that it uses, language of practice to use against the human. And to take that stand and go, no matter what the excitement is about, I'm going to recognize the excitement and sort of bank the fire for the marathon instead of the sprint.
Yeah, that's a very good image. And, you know, I just often we talk in practice about expanding the container. And as you were talking, I just had this image of there's all that excitement. And what we're so trained to do is to dissipate it through quickly reading the book. And I could hear this conversation in the head of like, well, no, I'm going to come back and do it. I'm just going to read through it first just to see, and then I'll do it again. And I just caught it, like, you're such a liar. That is never going to happen. That's never going to happen. It's going to be read through, and then the story is going to be, no, I've read that. I'm on to the next one.
Yeah.
And
in other words, you caught the bamboozle.
Exactly.
Which is what the book is about.
Yes. I was just saying, if we stay with the energy, it's like it bounces all around, in a sense, and if we learn to be with it, it naturally expands the container. But the thing that I wanted to say that is so brilliant, I'm not going to give it away because it's so well done, but you use an analogy in the book for egocentric karma conditioning self-hate, for conditioned mind, and it's such a perfect, I don't know if you call it a metaphor or an analogy or whatever it is, but it's so perfect. And I'll tell you, the life-changing thing for me was essentially what you said a minute ago, where it talks about nothing is a problem for conditioned mind. It can incorporate anything, including practice. Got that. It just takes it right on with no blip on the radar screen if we're not truly here for it. And when I read that, I had this very, like, this huge expansion of gratitude of feeling like, wow, this book was written for me, in the sense of for not, like, so conditioning wants to consume the book, but the book is set up to be a win, to be a gift to me, the human, because that's what the human wants, is to see through the bamboozle, to not be, you know, carried around by the bamboozle.
Well, it's such a level of practice depth, right, Jen, that we are able to disassociate the content from the process. In other words, to recognize the excitement as a process of excitement that doesn't come necessarily from consuming the book. It's just the process of excitement and anticipation and of authenticity and life being open to the learning process of the insights and awarenesses that are going to come from this practice with this particular piece of content. And the and conditioning would narrow that down to it's reading the book that's going to give you the energy, and it's one of it's like the process is the outcome. In other words, practicing with the book the way the book is laid out to practice, and sticking to that commitment allows us to see the bamboozle in action, which is what the process of the book is about. It's not about reading the book; it's about discovering the bamboozles. And paying attention at the level at which you're demonstrating, which is no matter what those voices say, I'm going to do this the way it's suggested.
Exactly.
Because that's the best chance ever for to see the process of suffering.
Right.
And transcend it.
And it feels to me, I just thought, wow, this is a brilliant addition to our practice library as the year of training to live in this year now comes to a close, because the training in it that I can see, it's exquisite. The opportunity to train with each week. And, you know, as I said to you when we were talking about, you know, would I do this interview, I said, well, I've only read the first week of the first bamboozle. And, you know, but to get to train with each one and the commitment, like last night, it was so funny because, of course, part of it is to record at the end of each night. So you do the assignment each day and you record each night about what you're saying. So tired last night. And but I knew I was going to do it. I turned on the recorder and I said, I don't mind admitting to you that I'm only turning this on because I have a commitment to do this. And the response from life was like, oh, that is so beautiful, and that's everything right there.
Yes.
You know, mm-hmm. it doesn't have to be a certain mm-hmm. way. We don't have to have a certain experience. We don't have to feel a certain way. And, of course, whenever there's that willingness to just meet ourselves wherever we are authentically, so much mm-hmm. comes from that. Yeah.
Yes, it's such that exquisite training to be with whatever it is that's arising in the moment. And that place that you're pointing at, right, Jen, which is no matter what happens, the we're building the trust to listen to life, to keep the commitment, not to go with egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like training anything, you know. I'm also doing some physical training right now, and so I'm feeling muscles that I haven't felt before mm-hmm. in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And in
mm-hmm.
that same way, it was funny, I stopped before the radio show early, and I just sat quietly, and it was earlier than usual, and so I had extra time, and I don't know how to describe it except that I could feel that the training I've done in the last 4 days of this first assignment, of this first month of Bamboozle, I could training there with that ability mm-hmm. to just stop in the middle of a lot going on and just enjoy a quiet moment. It's like it really mm-hmm. is a training. And it really, mm-hmm. oh, it just, yeah, there's so much in it.
Yes, and in that, I think it's pointing to the specific practice focus of the book, right? It's a practice, and it's the practice of not listening to the conversation in conditioned yeah. mind, however that yeah. manifests either as a gross conversation or sensations of energy as we're exploring in the email class, and mm-hmm. and the assistance from the training perspective to really do it with, I mean, the inspiration for the book was those universal karmic structures that everyone can recognize as egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate. And so yeah. to have that willingness to be able to look for it, see it, do the work of yeah. transcending it in order to get out of the conversation,
yeah.
wow.
Wow. Exactly. Wow.
Yes.
wow.
That's the opportunity.
A whole year of doing that, of training mm-hmm. in that, it's like you're training to train. And then conditioning is in such big trouble. It really is. Because, you know, if every bamboozle is laid out there and we're building a muscle around each one to be able to recognize it and transcend it, it's like, wow, you know, where's it going to hide? So,
yeah.
Very exciting.
Hopefully nowhere. Very
yeah.
exciting. Very, very exciting. Well, thanks,
yeah,
Jen. And I believe the book is now available for purchase on Keep It Simple Books, and
yeah.
hopefully at your neighborhood bookseller as well if you want, but to Keep It Simple Books
yep.
just released it this morning, I believe. So anyone
yeah,
who wants a copy?
Yep.
Yes, yeah. well, and we look forward to talking about those bamboozles on an ongoing basis as we
yeah.
go through the year.
For sure, for sure. And I'll just say quickly, Ashwini, just so much gratitude to you and to Sherry and to June. I know all three of you put so much of your own practice, obviously your heart, your creativity, what each person brings to it is incredible. And so just we all reap the benefits. So much, much gratitude for all of that.
Well, thank you, Jen. And, you know, it wasn't done just with three people. It was based on an email class and all of those wonderful responses that we received that informed the manifestation of a collective intelligence, right?
Yeah.
It's just
yeah.
it's a wonderful process to participate
yeah.
in that creativity of life unfolding. So thank
yeah.
you,
That's
everyone. It was truly
yeah.
a Sangha effort.
Yeah, yeah.
Thanks,
truly.
Jen.
Okay, thank you, Ashwini.
Michael, turning the show over to you and Sherry.
Okay, great. Thank you, Ashwini, and thank you, Jen. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. How are you?
Good. It was fun to hear all of that, I confess.
Yes, yes, it was great. I enjoyed it a lot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, I could get excited about reading that book.
Yeah, yeah. And I can relate.
You know, truly, right. the way they were talking about it, I thought, you know, I would like to do that. The way Jen was describing, you know, I would love to do that process over a whole year. People, you know, I hear regularly from people that they're doing the 30-day retreat, you know, making a change for good and that sort of thing. And I always say, oh, that would be so much fun to do. But there's always something else going on, you know. But, I mean, I have done it, but not on a regular basis. But this, for a whole year, I think I'll do it. I'm inspired.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, it sounds great. Can't mm-hmm. wait to get my hands on it.
No, I don't have a copy either, Michael, so don't feel left out. But we heard where we can get one, so that's good.
Yes, and I'm going to try not to just inhale it and consume it in one sitting, mm-hmm. as was suggested. So, and I have some announcements here, unless there's something else you'd like to share with us.
No, I'd like to hear what's going on.
Okay. Do you try to fix your life or yourself so that the undercurrent of something wrong isn't there? Sherry and Ashwini have a new book for you, as we just heard about, The Big Bamboozle, How You Get Conned Out of the Life You Want and What to Do About It, reveals what keeps us in dissatisfaction and stops us from choosing happiness and joy. And it's now available at keepitsimple.org.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Very good.
And mark your calendars for two fun and enlightening appearances by Sherry in the Bay Area next month. On Saturday, December 12th, Sherry will lead a workshop on The Big Bamboozle in Los Altos, uh-huh. California. And on Sunday, December 13th, Sherry, you will speak at the Open Circle Center in Berkeley, California.
That's true. And I think, unless I'm mistaken, Ashwini will be also a part of those events. So I think we're going to both be there for those.
Great.
Mm-hmm. I think.
And virtual meditation groups offer a unique way to support your practice by meditating together with Sangha on a regular basis, no matter where you live. For a complete schedule of these conference call style meditation groups, visit the virtual meditation groups page at livingcompassion.org. And celebrate a year of practice and welcome a new beginning at the New Year's Retreat, which is December 27th through January 1st in Menlo Park, California, which is in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And for these and other opportunities, visit schedule.livingcompassion.org. And usual reminders today, if you'd like to talk with Sherry, you can make a show to indicate that desire by pressing *6 and then 1. And a focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes helps everything. So let's get started.
All right. Thanks, Michael.
Sure. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Sherry, Michael, this is Jodine in San Francisco.
Hello, Jodine.
Hi.
How are you?
Well, I have been plowing through a rough patch. Conditioning was saying, you know, you can't possibly get on the air tonight and, you know, cry. And la la la. And so I said, well, okay, let's see.
Actually, I can.
Yeah, let's see if that's like the huge disaster that you would make it out to be. So, yeah. There's lots of content. The recent kind of flow has been that I have been trying to negotiate with my employer to return to work with my job restructured around the disabilities I have currently because of the Parkinson's disease. Mm-hmm. And this has been a very long process, and it has involved legal stuff. Although I stopped short a couple of times of, you know, kind of initiating the legal, like turning it into a legal challenge, it just kept seeming like, just wait and see, you know, just wait and see. So I have arranged a return to work, and I never threatened them with a lawsuit or anything like that. I don't even think they don't know that I officially even have a lawyer. I've always just talked with them and gone through negotiations, and if we got to a point where I needed to talk with my lawyer, I just said, you know, I need some time. Kept it like that. Because my goal was to return to work and not to be in like an adversarial, you know, environment. Mm-hmm. Now everything is clear for me to go back and work part-time starting next Monday. And I find myself in a big turn through the wheel of depression, I call it. I actually have the process that I experience with quote-unquote depression drawn as a big circle, you know, like a big process map. Mm-hmm. And basically I feel like despite a lot of tools that I have from practice, I'm in a really rough place.
Tell me about the rough place.
Well, the rough place,
not the, not the content of it, obviously, Jodine, not the content,
right.
But right. Yeah, what's happening that makes this a rough place?
Well, it is basically my daily challenges that I have, and actually I'm paying a lot of attention to it right now on like an energetic level. I wake up in the morning and I do not want to go on. I don't want to face another day, quote unquote. Now those are stories. Lots of times I drop out of it and I know I'm not going to listen to it. And I get up, and I have a schedule that is supportive. I either exercise or meditate first thing. And I have, you know, practices that I rely on.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Can I ask you a question right there? What do you do in the morning that makes you feel good? And I'll tell you what where I'm coming from with this, and then that might help you to answer the question. So, you know, we share a tendency toward depression. And I don't know when, but at some point in my practice history, I said to myself, I will not look to see how I feel until I've had tea. Mm. And that's just an agreement that I made. So what would happen, of course, is I would wake up, and as we know, very often karmic conditioning is ego is what wakes us up, right? And so we wake up into it. We wake up into its version of reality and its story about us and our life and all of that. And so if our attention goes there immediately, then that's the world we're living in. And I said, no, I'm not doing that, because I know that by the time I get up and I have tea and I turn my attention to what takes care of me, okay, the things that take care of me. So depending on where I am, it could be I do prostrations, I do yoga before I meditate, that kind of thing that gets me here, gets my energy shifted, right. And then I look to see how I feel. And it's a very different answer that I get first thing in the morning or after I've done the things that get me here in present in the body and present in the moment. So that's where that question is coming from.
Yeah. Well, this morning the first thing I did was record.
Uh-huh.
And there was quite a while that I was recording first thing. At the moment, I have a swim team that I joined that's real early, and I kind of need to hit the ground running to get there, seems like.
Mm-hmm.
But I have absolutely noticed that the difference in my energy from when my eyes open and I'm still in bed to having gone through some kind of next thing. And it does seem, from my point of view, it seems like movement is good.
Yes, although I neglected to say, and you reminded me, that recording and listening goes with tea for me.
Oh, well, there you go.
So that actually comes before anything else, and then the movement and the meditation and that sort of thing. So yes.
Yeah. Well, okay. I'm just gonna switch my calendar around to record, I think, first thing, because it definitely breaks the bubble, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
The illusion, because basically, yeah, like one of the things that has been.
Go ahead. I'll remember.
In terms of illusion, just an example, a typical example for me. Through these negotiations with my employer, I've set up something, this restructured job, which is the part of my job that I like the most and is only going to be part of the day and is completely manageable and I think going to be completely doable. And yet I wake up in this panic of I'm not going to be able to do it, right? Like, a story that seems real believable in that moment, that in fact I won't be able to do it.
Right. So here's the part that I think it's important for all of us to keep in mind. We each are very deeply, heavily conditioned to believe that our circumstances are the reason for our experience.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so because you have this condition, because, well, several, actually, because you've mentioned two of them on this call, right? So there's the Parkinson's and what that does to your life and to your job and that sort of thing, and there's the depression and what that does to your life and your job and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And whether we have that or not, whatever our particular set of circumstances, you know, my marriage is shaky, one of the kids is really sick, the kids hate me, my job is making me suicidal, the neighbors are threatening, whatever it is that's going on in our lives, even if nothing big is going on in our lives, egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate is going to run the same scam on us. It's going to try to get us first thing in the morning. It's going to talk us into the story. It's going to make us as miserable as it can make us, scare us if possible, tell us it's impossible, we can't do it, suck all the life force out of us before we even get out of bed. And so for me, it's just critical that we get it, that that process has nothing to do with what's going on in our lives.
You know, I have touched into that on a number of occasions, and it is liberating. It's absolutely liberating to, you know, to see the disconnect that's actually there.
Yes. Yes. Because, again, we all know, those of us who have been doing practice for a while, the circumstances of our lives have changed, and yet that process of attempting to pitch us into suffering and make us as miserable as we can be for as long as we'll stay there has been a constant. Even in good times, it's there, working every angle it can work to try to make a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, so the best thing is to just keep my attention somewhere else, because it's going to be going on. I look at my wheel, I look at my process map. When it gets going, it just gets going. It's like the same process it's been doing for years.
Yes, yes. And so, you know, I'm sure swimming is probably wonderful for you. It'd be wonderful for all of us if we did it. And to have something that you do first thing in the morning that you have to get up and rush to is never going to take care of us. It's just not. It could be the most wonderful thing in the world. And approaching it in that way is never going to take care of us, because the whole, I mean, unless, you know, there's just so much practice under your belt that nothing can throw you off. But having to hurry produces the sensations in the body that speak of urgency, and when urgency arrives, the voices have us. So the very thing that we have to do to get to this thing that we're going to enjoy is the thing that sets off karmic conditioning such that we're going to be miserable in the process and through the process.
Mm.
So if you could find a way to swim later so that you wake up into the things that really take care of you and set the tone for the day, right? You're talking to yourself about all of the good things in your life and why you want to do this and what you get out of it, what you love about it, and what it adds to your life, and how you're handling all of this. Maybe even, you know, some differences between the way your life has been in the past and the way it is now, and what you're seeing as opportunity and possibility. And you start out with that conversation. And then you move into your cup of tea or whatever it is where you you know, you sit with yourself and come to presence and conscious awareness
even further in a place of kindness and compassion and gentleness. And then you move into the physical things that take care of you. The, you know, maybe it's going to be swimming. Maybe it's sitting meditation, which would be a good thing to toss into the mix. And so you sit and you're with yourself in that way. And each step through life, your focus is on how do I take care of this human being as we're going forth to do what it is that needs to be done.
Okay, that's a great question.
For every moment, for everybody. And the thing about it is, I realize when I say these things, people hear it, can hear it through the filter of ego. So now my whole life is focused on making me happy. And that's not what we're saying at all. That's not even close to what we're saying. It's stepping out of the story in order to take care of, bring compassion to the human being who suffers. That's very different from I'm going to do everything to make me happy. I know you know that.
Right.
I just wanted to say it for everybody else.
I'm on the same page. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I know.
So,
I know.
But the I really, really appreciate this because I do love the swimming, but I do know exactly what you're talking about. It doesn't really feel kind until I'm actually in the pool and I've swum a couple laps, and that's when kind of the energy shifts over to, oh, this takes care of me in a way that I just love, you know. The getting to the pool, and perhaps
not so much.
Yeah, perhaps it just means that I get up earlier and have a new routine of recording and listening, and maybe something hot to drink. Yes, And then I leave at the same time, but I'm not like fresh from the, you know, having been put through the ringer, you know.
Yes, you're not vulnerable. You're not vulnerable.
Yes.
That's the difference. Yes. You have taken care of yourself such that you're coming from a place of grounded strength rather than a place of vulnerability. Yeah, because
right.
that's what karmic conditioning. Go ahead.
It's very much an energetic thing that we're talking about.
Yes.
Like from talking about the chakra class.
Yes. 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 Absolutely. And karmic conditioning is always looking for vulnerability. That's what it preys on. And it's always attempting to distract people into vulnerable places. So we're distracted and talked into not doing the things that take us to that grounded strength, but in fact get us kind of up in our head, confused and distracted and off balance, and then we are just easy targets for having the life force removed from us.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, you get started on that and you let us know, okay?
Yes, I will let you know.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks, Jodine. Good night.
Okay, thank you. Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us, Jodine.
So, Michael?
Yes.
Before we go on, I just want to make a comment about that. So, you know, Jodine is told by conditioning, You can't call in because you're going to cry. You can't do that. That's not okay to do that. It was really okay to do that, wasn't it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was a great conversation.
Yeah. In fact, those are the very times we really do need to jump over that hurdle and take care of the person, right?
Yeah. Yes.
So I just wanted to underline that because I project that a lot of people hear that. Well, you can't call in because you're depressed, or you're really down, or you're feeling negative, or you're upset, and you're going to cry, and so just wait until no. We don't wait. We just come how we are.
Yes. And as you've also pointed out, the story of, well, I can't call because I have nothing going on and everything's great. That's another story.
Right. That's the perfect time to call too, isn't it?
Yeah. Good when point. Can I call?
Yeah. No, that's good.
Great. So we're going to hear from our coaches program, Sherry, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
Okay.
This year's theme is training to live in this here now. In any training, having a personal trainer helps tremendously. We can think of Zen Awareness coaches as personal trainers. The coaches have been trained by Sherry Huber to offer individual coaching with any number of life issues or awareness practice in general, with special emphasis on recording and listening. We hear from folks new to practice and old-timers alike that awareness coaching provides the extra support their heart desires. And since coaches donate a percentage of their fees to Living Compassion, having a coach also supports practice. To request a Zen Awareness coach, visit sanghamarket.com. Go to Services under All Categories. Click on the little monk at the bottom and then follow the directions. We hope to hear from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air, and I think I found our first caller here, Sherry.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Okay, next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Oh, yes, loud and clear.
Oh, yay, okay. I probably am not the most conventional spot for calling, but it was my commitment to call in. I happened to remember on time, and I actually was the first caller, but I got bumped off. I used the app.
Uh-huh.
And surprising, like, I always call early, but I never get on, but now I'm on, so this must have been meant to be somehow.
Uh-huh. And you are who?
Sung Ho, sorry.
Sung-ho. Oh, I didn't recognize your voice.
Oh,
good.
Really? Okay.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
So what's up? How's it going?
It's good. Just keeping on practicing and sticking to my commitments best I can. And
I love that phrase. I got to tell you. I love that phrase, best I can.
Yeah, best
I can.
Yep. And adjusting to a different environment, a new climate from the West Coast.
freezing
Coast.
Cold?
It's getting to be cold, but it's actually quite nice today. It kind of goes up and down. And
and it's beautiful.
It is beautiful. I get to see fall, which is not something that I get to see at all on the West Coast as much, not like here. So, I'm really just calling to. Well, I mean, I'm practicing with like a few things. I apologize for any background noise, by the way. But I am happy to.
You what? With
you guys.
Say that again.
I said I apologize for any background noise that you might hear, but I'm happy I got on because I've been trying to get on for. An update. Okay. Yeah. The intensity of the conversations has subsided, but it's still challenging, you know? I also think I'm like in an environment where people are kind of very competitive, and it's important to get all A's, and so like that kind of upbringing in me like also gets reinforced in a very unkind manner.
Mm-hmm.
So just kind of like reminding myself to do the best I can. And also, like, I've noticed that, I don't know how much this is projection, but definitely, like, more than the West Coast where I was, the environment that I was in before, like, here now, it's like, people are like, well, who are you? Like, what do you have to prove for yourself? And, like, what have you done? And how many degrees do you have? And what's your GPA? And, and so, no, but I mean, that does exist. And I happen to be at a particular place where they hold a very, a lot of pride for what they, you know, who they are. And I noticed that I'm meeting a lot of people who are that. And I think, like, I when I was at, you know, my previous school, I've had all that and realized that that didn't mean anything, yet all of that is still getting conjured up. And I don't know, also, like, I'm not really sure. I want to do the best I can. And I kind of realized that it really doesn't matter what you do. It's almost like passion is something that you bring to the work. Like, as long as I'm fully absorbed in what I'm doing, like, I can be happy doing it, whatever that is. So yeah, I don't know. I'm not really sure. I'm just trying to take it one day at a time and just kind of trusting vaguely, even though I'm not sure that things will work itself out. Despite the
Here's what I'm hearing in this, Sung Ho.
Okay,
you're having a workshop, right? Whatever else you're learning, you're seeing a ton.
Right?
So it's kind of like you're going possibly for there's a degree on the one track, and on the parallel track there's no degree, but oh my God, there's a lot of education.
Definitely. And just trying to stay grounded in a world that feels very conditioned to me. I don't know. And just, yeah, but it's hard. And I think I struggle with this kind of process in all areas of my life, like with age and with looks and with everything. It's like, well, I know deep down, like from experience, that, you know, what matters to me is something more impermanent and more authentic and what resonates with practice. Yet I continually get information from the outside world and from authorities or whatever that I should be meeting certain, quote, standards. And when I do meet those, quote, standards, I get a lot of privileges that I wouldn't otherwise get, and I have the life experiences that I have that I otherwise would never have had. So that's kind of like I...
And can I ask you a question about that?
Sure.
Does knowing that mean you have to take it seriously?
I guess not. But I guess there is a part of me that does. I never thought of it before. I guess
well,
this is the person who feels really depressed about that, and I don't know. But it's always like I see myself trying to meet those standards all the time. It's so depressing.
So, right. Well, so it seems to me, again, there are two things going on. One, there's a part of you who recognizes how the game is played. And if you play the game really well, you win the game and you get lots of goodies. Okay? Now, that person doesn't particularly care about that, isn't particularly interested in it, but the goodies are nice.
Yeah.
Right? And that's when I ask, do you really need to take it seriously? The fact that there is a game, that you do know how to play it, that you can play it well, and you can win, does it mean that you have to take the game seriously? I would suggest a good answer to that is no. Okay? Then the other thing that happens under those circumstances is you watch how you're still pulled in to taking the game seriously, to believing that it is important and that it does matter and that you have to compete and you have to win and you have to, and that's the part that you are working to transcend. If you get depressed about it, that will definitely slow down the transcendence.
Okay. Interesting. I kind of was just going back and forth like, oh, should I play this game? Because I know if I play it, like, I could do well. But then would I be sacrificing what I'm, you know, I don't know. But it definitely feels like just getting depressed about it and giving up doesn't feel good either. That was kind of where I was at with it.
That's right. But I would suggest that depressed and giving up is nothing more than egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate.
Oh,
and it's going to be
right,
there.
Yeah.
Attempting to be a player in anything that you're doing, right? So you play the game, you play it well, that's overwhelming and depressing. You decide not to, that's overwhelming and depressing. You compete and you lose, well, that's really overwhelming and depressing. But it's always offering the same perspective no matter what you do. So this is what we were talking about with Jodine, right? So what we need to do, all of us, is take that off the table. That's actually not, it's as if, you have a blue gnome following you around through your life. You can ignore that. It's not really a part of anything that's going on with you, right? It's a blue
mm-hmm.
gnome. And mm-hmm. and if you have that blue gnome following you around and somebody said, don't pay any attention to it. It's just a blue gnome that has attached itself to you. You go, okay, well, it's creepy and annoying, but okay, I can learn to ignore that. That's the way we have to approach egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate. Because it's
mm-hmm.
the same thing. It just follows you around and attaches to anything that you're doing. So if we realize that's actually not part of this, so then we have the two aspects of can you play the game because you want to play the game and you choose to and you don't take it seriously? And at the same time, can you use that opportunity to see how that system has its hooks in you, how you get pulled into being one of those people that you don't actually admire or respect, right? How do we know about those people who are sort of shallow and just chasing superficial ideals? And how do we know about that? Well, because they live inside us, right? And we're projecting that onto people. Are
yeah.
those people actually like that? I don't know what they're like. I only know what I'm projecting onto them. So then we bring it back here and I get to see it in me. Okay, this is where I want to work on it. Because going, and this is the thing that I think is really critical, again, for all of us, whatever we're dealing with. Leaving the circumstances won't change that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It'll still be there in you. It's just that you might not have to face it. And, of course, egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate gives that as option one for everyone. Well, if you just leave this relationship, you won't have to feel that way. If you just make more money, then you will be blah, 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 blah. Okay, so it's always leave these circumstances that you're in, go to these other circumstances, and you won't have to feel the way you're feeling now. But that doesn't mean any of it went away. It just means
right.
I'm not having to face it currently.
Right. I mean, a lot of this resonates with me, but it's still not clicking to me how it's taking it seriously. So I guess there's more to see. And I'll listen back to this call, and I'll call again. But,
yes.
And I'm also coming to the New Year's retreat, so looking forward.
Oh, good. Good.
Yeah.
All right. I want to say this one other thing, okay? That
yes,
you listen
yes.
back. This is the koan part of the program, right? So one of the things that I say to people as an example of one of the big ways conditioning gets us. So you're a little kid and your mother wants you to clean your room. Okay? Then you're a teenager and your mother wants you to pick up your clothes and clean up your room. I'm sure you always had a clean room, but imagine that you didn't. And so you do it.
Yeah.
You do it, and you hate every second of it, and you stomp around, and you're resentful. And what you get is no credit for having cleaned the room, because what you needed to do was clean the room and be happy about it. Okay? So there you are. So there's the game, and you can play the game well, but if you ever get hooked into taking it seriously, then that means you're a failure. You have to decide that you don't care about any of this and not do it and not be interested in it, and that would make you the right person. But what you must do simultaneously is be fabulously successful.
Well, there was a lot in that.
There was a lot in that, but I know you can handle it.
There is a part of me that is like, okay, you're hitting on something that was very important for me.
Yep.
And
yep.
Yep. So
You'll listen to it, and you'll get it. I have absolute faith.
Well, thank you, Sherry. It's so good to hear it from you, and thank you for everything. I'll be in touch again. So thank you.
Take good care.
To you and Michael.
All right.
Bye-bye.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Sung Ho. It's a fabulous conversation, Sherry. And I didn't quite follow the last part there. I was wondering if you could say that again. About
the clean your room and be happy about it?
Well, yeah, I got that part. And then you talked about being fabulously successful at the same time as not being interested in it.
That's right. So the stakes keep getting raised. So we'll use Sung Ho, since she was the one talking about it. So she can go and be in this very competitive environment, and she can do very well. She can be successful, top of the class, straight A's, all of that. Okay, but that would make her one of those people who walk around asking people who they are and what their grade point average is. And she doesn't want to be one of those kind of people, right?
Right.
Well,
right.
Can you be successful at that, in that kind of endeavor, and not take it seriously? You can tell people your grade point average is 2.5 and just watch them wonder what you're doing there, okay? Or whatever you wanted to do. Okay, then there's the spiritual opportunity of watching how in that environment the duality is there. One, yes, I can do this and I can be successful at it, but I don't like those people who are like that, and yet I want to do that and be successful. So the good, right person thing to do is not be like that, not do that. Just say, oh, I'm not that way, while going ahead and in some mysterious way that is not revealed to us, be just as successful as you would be had you played that game and been and gone down that track. Right?
Yes.
So it's not, I don't admire that. I don't want to be that kind of person. I'm going to get a job working in a supermarket and live happily ever after. No. That is not going to be an option either. So in other words, when karmic conditioning sets it up for us, there's no winning.
Yes. Yes. And what I'm hearing in what you're saying is a conversation we had a month or two ago with a caller about being the happiest and best employee, about doing my part the best, and at the same time, I'm, in some sense, it means nothing. I'm the best in the world, and it's great. I don't take it personally. I don't think I'm better than other people. It's fun. It's enjoyable.
Yes. I'm just living the life I want to live.
Yes.
Which is a very subtle piece of what I was trying to point out with Sung Ho. So there you are. You know, you're in this okay, let's face it. She's at a big deal university. And there are all of these other extraordinary people who are at this big deal university, and they all want to be the biggest deal at the big deal university, right? Well, can you go on ahead and be the big deal by those standards simply because what you're doing is doing the best that you can do at what you're there to do.
Yes.
So it's, I don't know this, but I've heard this, that when culturally, when Japanese cheer, so they're at a marathon, and what they're shouting to the runners is, do your best, right? So it's not a matter of who you're beating. It's, are you doing your best? That's what's important. And what everybody else is doing, well, it's what they're doing. I don't know what they're doing. But it's so anti-conditioning to live that way, to have no interest or concern in what anybody else is doing. I'm just doing the very best that I can do. So right now I'm at university and I am in this course of study and I'm going to do the very best that I can at that because that's where I am and that's what I'm doing. And what anybody else is doing, I have no idea.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, I have no idea, right? I can listen to conditioned mind that's projecting all these things and having opinions about these people and all of that, but that's just the blue gnome, right?
Yes.
That doesn't have anything to do with anything. When I really look at it, I don't know what anybody else is doing. I have a hard enough time knowing what I'm doing. Yeah.
This is just so helpful. Just so helpful to me. It's great.
Oh, good. Good.
Yeah. And we do have time for another caller, so I'm excited about
all
that.
All right.
Okay. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi. Hi.
Who's this?
Hi, Sherry. This is Becca from Baltimore.
Well, Becca from Baltimore, how the heck are you?
I'm really good. I'm really, really good.
Excellent.
Yay. Exciting.
Tell me about that.
Well, I mean, I've been dealing with a lot of things that you were talking about tonight. Actually, I felt like everyone was talking about a part of my process. I think for me, doing my personal best is really my mantra. Because my best is different than other people's best. And
that's right.
That's okay. And I've gotten to a point where, you know, if people want me around and in their lives, they'll have to accept that, like, that's where I am and want me to be around, even if it means that I can't always be healthy enough to do the things that they think I should be able to do, you know? So.
Yes, or that they'd like you to do.
Exactly, or that they'd like me to do. Absolutely. And that it kind of comes with, like, a whole package. Like, what's valuable about me is informed by the life experience that is causing the issue with me not being able to be present as much with other people, I guess, or to be able to do as much work as they think I should be able to do. But the part of me that they value is informed by that part of my life.
You know, Becca, what you're describing is, you know, possibly the most essential thing for us to get as human beings. So I'm gonna give a shot at reflecting what you're saying and see if I'm on track, okay? First of all, it seems to me that each of us doing our best is the greatest gift that we can give to life because we're here as what we are, and that is what we bring. That's our gift to one another and to life in general, right?
Mm-hmm.
Attempting to be something else is actually not helpful. It just makes us unhappy, and when we're unhappy, we tend to make other people unhappy too, right? And so the subtle piece of what you just said is, so I know you, and I appreciate you. And what conditioning would have me believe is that then there are these other things about you that I wish were different.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not, if I'm actually appreciating you, then all those things that I would change are as much a part of what I value and appreciate as are the things that I would see as positive traits.
Absolutely.
Because all of it goes together to make up Becca.
Exactly. And we can't all be everything to everyone or everything. And that's what's so great about community, is that each person brings their own unique expression to this world. And they can't
that's
be the
right.
fastest, the strongest, the best, the most compassionate, the kindest, the most caring. They can't be all of those things.
That's
I mean,
right.
They'll have their strengths in different areas.
That's right. And when we see it that way, then that's what we appreciate, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's no person X without his temper, or there's no
mm-hmm.
Person Y without her sharp tongue, or there's
mm-hmm.
no, right? So we would say, oh,
right.
I just love him, but that then he just goes off, and it's just really, or, you know, I just love her, and I so wish she wouldn't say things like that. No. It's a package.
Yeah, it's a form of non-acceptance to say,
mm-hmm.
I wish they were different than they are.
Mm-hmm. And I would say that the most important piece of what you're looking at and talking about is that's how we need to be toward ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah.
And there's so much suffering for me personally, and I'm sure for many people, around the idea that we should be different. And we can't be within a certain extent. Like, I've bumped up against limitations of a body. I can't do anything
mm-hmm.
about that.
Mm-hmm.
Just mm-hmm. what is.
Well, you actually can, of course, do something about it. You can use it as an opportunity to choose unconditional love.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, yes,
mm-hmm.
absolutely. But I can't
believe a glorious
that
thing.
I'll have, right, but at the same time, I can't ever believe that I'm going to have, like, an athlete's body. Like, so,
mm-hmm.
like, there's, yeah, so definitely that's, and I think that's the reason why I'm coming more and more to peace with it, is because I'm, that exact process is what's
mm-hmm.
going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you can really appreciate athletes.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Because their bodies can do things that your body isn't able to do.
Absolutely. And then
you can enjoy that.
Absolutely. And then when they hurt their bodies or overdo it or need healing or something like that, they can come see me. Because
that's right. That's right. And, you know, because we are all so connected, and because human beings are such extraordinary creatures, you could be there. And I don't know if you're a sports fan at all. Are there any sports that you like?
I like wrestling, actually, like
okay.
old school,
yeah.
high school wrestling.
Yeah, yeah. So you could watch. You could sit there and watch two people wrestle, and you could actually experience wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually feel it within yourself. So we know when we're really paying attention, when we're really present to it, we know what it feels like to, go on a snowboard off the side of a cliff and be airborne until you hit the snow. And, you know, you can feel it in your body. You know, you can feel what
mm-hmm.
your stomach does and your heart rate and your breathing and all that. We are experiencing it in our own way.
Mm-hmm.
And we're robbed mm-hmm. of that when we have a conversation in the head that says they're doing something you can't do, or I wish I could do that, or it's unfair that people get to do that and I don't get to do that. And then we miss that opportunity to really enjoy thoroughly and vicariously everything
mm-hmm.
that everybody else brings to the party.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
No. And it's beautiful when you can look around and see the beautiful thing that everybody brings to the party. And
mm-hmm.
there's so much variation, and it's so interesting and beautiful. And just like, for me, it's like a symphony, like when, in those moments when you can just
mm-hmm.
see everyone kind of being themselves as much as possible. And when you are strong enough to be yourself as much as possible, you're giving the best gift that you can give to anyone, because then they feel like they can be themselves around you. And that is, like, the best.
The best.
Thing to me.
Nothing yeah. beats unconditional love and acceptance. Nothing.
No. No. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure, I mean, I that's one of the reasons why I love having you in my life and calling you, because I know that you feel that way about me.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm. It's the God's truth. Okay.
Well, yeah, we're all doing the best we can. Totally.
That's right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, it's great to hear your voice.
Yours too. Thank you so much. Have a great evening.
Thank you. You too. Good night.
Good night. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Becca. And wow is about the only word that comes to mind, Sherry. Just a fabulous show and fabulous yeah. practice.
It is, isn't it? Oh. God, I wouldn't have thought it's possible, but I do love it more every day.
Yeah. It's great. Great.
Yeah. Thank you, sir.
Wonderful.
Talk to you.
Thank you, Sherry.
Talk to you before long, I hope. Okay. Good night,
sure
Michael.
Hope so. Good night.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.